the drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Hula, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go off the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No, it's good.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Anthony Ferretti. I'm joined alongside my wonderful co-hosts and partners in crime this evening, Joey Dwyer and Leo Stoddart. Fellas, we got another week in the books. It's Thursday night.
And let me tell you, this has been a long Thursday. It's been a long week, but today especially, you guys saw I ran in here with like 2 minutes to spare because I've been doing TV 10 work, but thank God that we finally have reached Thursday night doing the Red Zone, talking sports with the boys. I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, it was. We were a little worried we were going to miss you there, Joey, but then you came sprinting on the hall. We really should have clocked you with a stopwatch because you were flying some athletic times in those khakis and a polo you got going. So
I appreciate it.
Pretty impressive.
These are like those old Navy khakis where they got like the stretch in them, so I can fly in these bad boys.
Or you could go play a game of basketball if you needed to. All right.
I'm telling you, these khakis, I'm running a sub 540. No doubt.
Yeah, get you ready for the NFL Combine.
Exactly.
Yeah, running, trying to run fast. We got a great show planned for you, you listeners, tonight. We're going to talk about the MLB playoffs. We got the NBA Finals. Then we got news and sports guest Haley Schreffler coming on to talk about social justice and sports. And then we got the pick six. So fittingly, we're starting with the NBA playoffs. Both the Cubs and White Sox are in the playoffs in addition to the Cardinals with former Redbird Paul DeJong. But I guess we can dive in a little bit with the White Sox. They're playing the Athletics in Game 3 of the AL wildcard. It's currently going on. White Sox took the first game. Lucas Giolito, very impressive in that start then. Tried to get the offense moving in Game 2. Couldn't really get a response to try and come back. Now it's Game 3. As of now, they're down by a couple of runs, but let's see if they can bring them back.
I really hope so. So right now, it's the bottom of the eighth. It's still 6-4 Oakland. And I would be so disappointed if this was how the Sox season came to a close, just because they were so hot all year, and they just kind of hit this bump here at the end of the season going into the postseason. And so I think what the Sox really got to do in these last, you know, two innings is buckle down, make sure they're playing. Their bats got to come alive. Luis Robert hit an absolute blast to left center earlier this game. We haven't seen a whole lot from Jose Abreu today. So hopefully the future AL MVP can step it up here in the late innings and bring the Sox to the promised land.
I think today's game is just an indictment on what I kind of feared at the trade deadline, where Rick Hahn did not put this team maybe in the best position to succeed in the playoffs, where they've needed their third starter today, and they had to go with Dane Dunning, who is a rookie who you never knew what you were going to get, and they were quick to pull him early. I think this is where they needed a third starter, another veteran option. That goes on management, where they didn't look to acquire one in some way, because after Giolito and Keuchel, it is a little shaky, so they tried going with the bullpen day today, and so we're in the eighth inning here, and they are on their ninth pitcher with Dylan Cease currently in the bullpen. That is just not a sustainable strategy, where you're kind of betting on your bullpen, and it's kind of worked to an extent where some of these guys did well, but then others haven't. So I think the management ill-prepared them for this situation, and we have seen some of their key players have stepped up. In Game 1, we saw Abreu with the big home run, Lucas Giolito going eight innings with very well, and even Tim Anderson has been so consistent this series. So the players that they've needed to step up have so far, I think it's just been a little bit they've had some bad luck in some horrible times so far in this series.
And looking at Twitter today, while the Sox have played, I've seen so many people calling for the firing of Ricky, the White Sox clubhouse manager. And Leo, as the resident Sox fan, I wanted to know what your take was, because people have been saying this for a while, and I tend to agree that with the core that we have, we should not be a seventh seed going through this fluctuation of we're a great team and then we'll take a slide and lose four games, five games in a row. So I just want to know what your perspective was on the management of the team.
So just looking at today's game with Rick Renteria, where I think he was a little too quick to pull Dane Dunning, especially when you knew it was going to be a bullpen day, and he went with Garrett Crochet pretty quick. And then that's basically the move that backfired that cost them to go to all these arms way too soon, because Crochet then experienced left forearm tightness, which could be an indication of some serious problems. So they had to pull him after facing just two batters, and that's where your bullpen day plan went off the rails. So I think that Ricky, we've seen him where he's made some lineup decisions that maybe a more experienced veteran manager wouldn't do and that have just completely backfired on him. And this decision is so far backfiring on the biggest stage where you can't afford that to happen.
And so we don't spend our entire time talking about the White Sox to give our other Chicago listeners some substance to listen to. The Cubs Marlins obviously got postponed today. But Freddie, are you worried? Cubs being down 1-0?
A little bit, just the way the Cubs have been playing. They haven't really been up to speed, and we've seen kind of the big names like Bryant and Rizzo. They're really trying to get things going in the playoffs, and I think the bullpen, too, is a big issue for us as well. We're trying to get some consistent pitchers to try and get some strikeouts, get us out of jams. But who knows? This could give us some time with this rain delay. We saw in 2016 there was that rain delay in the World Series. Ended up bringing home the trophy. Maybe this can give them time to regroup and say, hey, we can do it. They are at home, so they do have home field advantage, but now it's really pressure on them to try and get a winner-take-all game. But it was surprising that they moved the game because it was raining, and then all of a sudden it stopped. So right when the game was going to start, it was beautifully sunny, and no one was on the field.
And that's kind of what it's been like in Blono today, just rain off and on. But if I were a Cubs fan, I would be a little scared, because the Marlins feel almost like a team of fate-esque, because I've been seeing all over Twitter and all over Instagram, the Marlins don't lose when they get in the playoffs. And the last time the Marlins were in the playoffs, they faced the Cubs.
He's going to go there.
I'm just saying. Everybody knows how that ended. I don't have to say anymore.
Bartman.
But I'm just saying, if I were the Cubs, I would feel like fate is not on my side.
I really didn't know too much about the Marlins coming into this series. It just feels like it was years ago when they were the team that almost ruined baseball season for all of us, when they had that outbreak amongst their roster, and it was them and the Phillies where there was an outbreak in, what was it, the first week of the season. So it took them so long to catch up. So it is very interesting that all of a sudden they're now on the cusp of potentially eliminating the Cubs, when we really weren't expecting too much from them going into the season. And I just think with the Cubs, though, they're one of those teams where if they get hot, you never know how far they can go. We've seen Chris Bryant kind of got his swagger back in that last series of the regular season against the White Sox, where he was wearing Mike Napoli's magic chains that they've been passing from player to player in the clubhouse. And I think that's just – baseball is such a long season, such a superstitious sport, where you get a little bit of that mojo going, it could really take you to some new heights.
And I think you're absolutely right, where we cannot count out the Cubs, because those – batters and the guys that we hear so much about are so dangerous. Rizzo, Baez, Bryant, if those guys all get hot at the same time, the Cubs have just as good of a chance as anyone to make a run for the World Series. And so I would never count them out. And maybe, Freddie, you're right, and this rain delay gave them a little bit of time to all get on the same page. I'm still rooting for a Chicago World Series, and for that to happen, I think the Cubs gotta overcome the Marlins. So fingers crossed. This is the only time I'm ever gonna cheer for the Cubs, just so they can get beat by the Sox in the World Series. But I think that would be awesome, and I think they are capable. They have the bats, and their starting rotation has proved to be really dangerous at times this year. So I think if they can get consistent enough play out of their bullpen, they could make a run.
I think so. And you mentioned with it being a potential Chicago World Series, that would be pretty big for the city. I mean, we would know then a Chicago team's going to win. But as you mentioned, kind of with their offense, they've got to get things rolling. We saw Ian Happ in game one. He led the way, was 2-for-4 with them, had an RBI and scored as well. But they need to get production from their other players. They need Schwarber to step up. They need Bryant to step up. They need Rizzo. They need Contreras. They need Baez. They need everyone in that lineup to step up no matter where they are, 1 through 9, to get something going.
And I agree. But the one thing that hurts, if this were to be a Chicago World Series, is the fact that it would take place in Arlington, Texas.
Yeah, that is the one thing because of the bubble that they
exactly have. So that's the one thing that hurts. But you know what? I would still – that's must-see TV. I would absolutely – I wouldn't pay to watch it. You can find the sites to stream that, but I would watch it for sure.
Honestly, it's probably for the best that there's no fans going to be there, because having been to a few Cubs-White Sox games in person, those just bring out the worst in people. So honestly, if it were to happen in the playoffs, it's probably for the best that it will happen at a remote site with no fans, because – regardless, one way, half the city's probably going to burn.
I'm telling you, it's those Northsiders. They don't know how to act.
Well, you're talking about not allowing fans. According to an article on ESPN, they do want to allow a limited number of fans for the NLCS and the World Series in Arlington. So as of now, I believe they want to allow a 28% capacity.
All right, those are going to be some expensive tickets, but I think if we all pool together our money, we could afford one. And then I think it's rock, paper, scissors from there.
Maybe we could use the WZND credit card or try to get credentials or something.
Yeah. If Steve's listening right now, I wouldn't mind using the card. We could go cover it. We're members
there,
of the press.
Road trip to Texas.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Take the ZND van.
That'd be great. Take the ZND
van. I don't know if the ZND van's going to make it to Arlington, but yeah, we'll see.
It's made it to and from St. Louis. So.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a test. But fingers crossed, you know.
We'll see. Cubs and White Sox definitely facing a test. Well, that'll just about wrap it up for our playoff coverage. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hit the hardwood. You're listening to the Red Zone and the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Some knowledge belongs.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Just talked about the MLB playoffs. Paul DeYoung fittingly bringing us back, trying to get the Cardinals to go into the NLDS as they've got a one-game lead over the Padres, trying to clinch tonight. But now we're going to move to the hardwood. We had game one of the NBA Finals start last night between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Miami Heat. Joey, we've been talking about it ever since you said earlier in the season the Heat are the team to watch. Now they're 4 wins away from the finals. They had a convincing lead heading into halftime, but then LeBron and the Heat, or not the Heat, the Lakers, they just started to get going. They took the lead and never looked back.
And this just shows you how dangerous the Lakers are. And as much as I love the Heat, and I would love to see the Heat win, the Lakers are just such a good team. When you've got LeBron James and Anthony Davis, we can hate on the Lakers all we want, but that's an unbeatable roster. They're so good, and I just don't see a way that the Heat can pull this series off. I would love it. I would love it if they did, but based on what we saw last night, I just don't see a chance that the Heat can do something that could get them back in this series. I think unless it's, barring a miracle, I think the Heat are out of this one.
Yeah, this is just a tough one because it has felt like the Miami Heat are this storybook team, like that could be the potential spoiler. But then we see the two teams go head-to-head, and just the Lakers look so good. But honestly, so far my favorite storyline from the finals has been, maybe not even this isn't even on the court, but this I saw this stat on Twitter last night, so I just had to bring it to the show, was that now this makes the 37th consecutive NBA final where a teammate of Shaquille O'Neal's has been represented, with LeBron James playing and Rajon Rondo each playing. So honestly, Shaquille O'Neal is probably the real winner of this series because now people are talking about him.
And I love that. That pops up every year, and it will until like the year 2030, which I think is so funny. But yeah, that just speaks to LeBron's legacy, and we'll get into that because I'm sure that, you know, LeBron, barring disaster for him, he's going to win this, and so he'll get another ring, and then we'll have to talk about, you know, the perennial, who's better, Jordan or LeBron. Oof. But I think that this Anthony Davis is the sidekick that LeBron has been looking for, where he's the true number one on the team. Because in Miami, the big three, you could argue Dwayne Wade was the number one. But in L.A., LeBron is the number one, and AD is the sidekick that he has wanted. AD is the Pippen to LeBron's Jordan, and I think that has really, like, taken this weight off of the shoulders. Oh, sorry to interject, but Sox just lost. So
well,
that's the end of the season for the White Sox. But anyway, sorry, what I was saying was LeBron finally has the sidekick that's worthy of the true number two role, and I think they're unstoppable.
And what I love most about watching Anthony Davis play is where he exemplifies what the modern big man could be, where he's just not a guy you park under the basket and just have him get rebounds and stuff. He can go move up court quick. He can shoot three-pointers. He can play defense, offense. He is just a threat on all aspects of the court, and we've seen that with Kevin Durant too, like this modern big man where you can it comes with the positionless basketball we're seeing more and more of, where his size doesn't just define him to a role, where he is just a threat in all aspects of the game, and that makes it so much harder to match up when he's basically the second option on his team. So it's almost like pick your poison with the Heat. Like, who do you put if you're going to make a double team? Who do you choose to double team, LeBron or Anthony Davis? Like, either way, one of them's going to go off in the game. So you almost have to just decide with which one can you live with.
Yeah, exactly. You got to trying to really adjust getting to the zone defense, because as much as the man defense would probably work, those stronger players like LeBron and AD, they've got the skill of two NBA players. So you're going to need to have better guys on them. But Anthony Davis had a historic NBA Finals debut for the Lakers, as he got 34 points, and that trailed only Shaquille O'Neal, as well as I'm trying to think of who the other guy is. Shaquille O'Neal and George Mikan. Shaquille had 43 and George had 42.
And we just keep talking about Shaquille on this, I guess. But I mean, when you're talking about Lakers in the finals, it's hard not to. But that's another example of the dominant big man, him and AD, very similar. So it's very fitting that they're on that same list, is they are play this big style, and especially early Shaq when he had more athleticism, they are very reminiscent of each other, except AD is obviously a better shooter, just like a pure shooter. But that's the kind of the key to success that a lot of teams have been going with, is having that dominant big man and then a good supporting cast around him. And LeBron James, if talking in terms of the big man, is the best supporting cast you can get. So AD and LeBron, we can say it all day. They are dominant, and there's no way they lose the series. In my mind, I just don't think the Heat have any chance.
It'd be really cool to see the Heat win this series, just given how far they've come. And Jimmy Butler as well, we've seen him with the Chicago Bulls, and just trying to see if he can get a ring. But like you said, I think just the way the Lakers are playing right now with the players that they have, it's going to be tough for them to be stopped, as now they're 3-1 away from hoisting the Larry O'Brien Trophy.
Go ahead, Leo.
Another thing about the Lakers is that LeBron has almost taken it on his mission where he's playing for Kobe this playoff. And when they wear those Mamba jerseys, it's like so hard to bet against them, because you know just that extra emotional weight this team's playing with, where I wouldn't hate to see them win the championship for that specific reason this year, just given all the weight they're playing with right now.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That was such a tragedy to lose Kobe the way that we did, and the sports world was just absolutely rocked. So I think that is a huge motivator for the Lakers, and that is one of the biggest storylines, is winning it for Kobe, especially when they come out in the Black Mamba jerseys and they do all this stuff to commemorate what a great career and what a great life he led. And that's another reason why I just think the Lakers are unstoppable right now.
And looking at them, this is James's 10th NBA final. I believe he's 3-6 in the finals so far, so trying to get that fourth ring. Obviously not Jordan level with those six rings. Something interesting, too. Andre Iguodala, this is his sixth straight NBA final.
Which is nuts. I mean, LeBron had, what, eight in a row starting late 2010, something like that. Or he had a bunch in a row, and he missed only last year, and now is back. But Iggy, I'm sure, is having flashbacks every time he goes to put a layup up of LeBron chasing him down in 2016, slapping him off the backboard. But yeah, Iggy is a great locker room guy to have, especially with a young roster like the Heat have, Duncan Robinson, Bam, Tyler Herro, stuff like that. And I think this team is going to be a great team in years to come. They've got some great players, but I just don't think anybody's going to stop the Lake Show right now.
And talking a little bit about Iguodala, where I remember way back when this trade happened, we were debating it on Wake Up Normal back with Keegan and Jose when I was the producer for that show. And Jose Sandoval made a really good point where that Iguodala kind of got overshadowed a little bit when he was with the Warriors. So you didn't get to see him really take control as much. But with the Heat, he's been able to step into a bigger role, and he's really adjusted well into that expanded role.
And he's... he is one of these like great bench guys who just float around the league and make an impact wherever he goes. And they've got a lot of players similar to that. Like Jay Crowder is another one where he just is an impact player no matter what team he's on. Jimmy Butler, another guy who's floated around the league and has always been kind of this impact guy. And so I'm in love with their lineup, and I love the Heat. And if there was any way the Heat could win this, I'd be so excited. But unless J-Butt and Tyler Herro both have like a 30-point performance and are dominant on defense, I think it's over.
Either that or like LeBron or AD somehow tears an ACL during this.
Yeah, like barring injury or something else tragic happening to the Lakers, I think that they've got this one in five or six.
You're thinking five or six games.
I don't think the Heat take... I think I'm being generous saying six. I think the Heat will take one, probably game two, and then the Lakers will just run it from there.
Yeah, I just really have to agree with you there, Joey. I think the Lakers are about as dominant of a team as we've seen in recent years, and they are just – it's tough to see that there's not an equal opponent for them in this final because, you know, we've waited so long for championship basketball, and now this is kind of what we get. It's almost like – I just really hate it that we're crowning the Lakers champions already when they still have to win three more games. But it really just is like that, where they are that good and that overmatched against Miami. And that's we're going to have to go back to this because I probably just jinxed it all to happen. I'm sure in a week from now the Heat are going to win the next four straight games.
And I would be thrilled. I would be absolutely thrilled.
I was just way too complimentary of the Lakers. So now, of course, they're not going to win a game for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, you're talking about... having a dominant team like the Lakers and kind of already crowning him. What if the NBA, just throwing it out there, did something like the NHL where they had an expansion team and they had the chance to draft them, like we saw with the Golden Knights, to almost try and create that super team because the Knights, they weren't expected to be really good, but then all of a sudden made it to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, I don't know, could we see that with the NBA the way it could be at?
I feel like with the NBA, you need that grade A, top-tier superstar. So you're not going to get a player like that in an expansion draft, or you could throw a lot of money at them in free agency, but unless you have a LeBron James, a Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, or like a Steph Curry caliber player, I think you're always just going to be just close but no cigar when it comes to championships, where it's you need that future Hall of Famer to win a championship. And yeah, unless you're getting one of those in expansion draft, I just don't think it's going to happen.
To add to your point, the NBA is such an individuals league, you know, like whoever is going to win the title, unless you're the 04 Pistons, you're going to have like a future Hall of Famer or somebody who's really going to carry your team in that regard. And for the Heat, like if Jimmy Butler proves to be that guy, that's awesome, but you don't have one of those top five guys, no Kevin Durant, LeBron, AD, James Harden, Steph, one of those guys who transcends the sport and is this huge face globally representing basketball and is like no doubt a first ballot Hall of Famer. Those are the guys that'll get you to the chips, especially in the NBA and it's the way the NBA works today.
and those guys are just so few and far between. I mean, we've seen the Bulls have basically been looking for that guy since Jordan retired. You might have had one in Derrick Rose if he stayed healthy, but it's just, it's so hard to capture that, that it's just, and you pretty much can't win without one. And you really harped on it, Joey, where it is an individual sport, where I feel like basketball is, of the four major professional sports, it's probably the only one where if you just have that dominant individual, it could take you a little farther than a complete team.
Well, that will just about do it for our coverage. You mentioned that you want to have some of those big players like LeBron, some of the MVP candidates. But that brings us to our Red Zone question of the week is, who do you think will be named the Finals MVP? We got four players, two from each team. We got LeBron James and Anthony Davis for the Lakers, Jimmy Butler and Tyler Herro for the Miami Heat. Going to post that poll. We want to hear from you and comment as well if you think it's going to be none of those and there might be a dark horse maybe for an MVP like Andre Iguodala. We'd love to hear from you, but that'll just about do it. We're going to take a break. We are listening to the Red Zone and the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
You're listening to 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of 103.3 WZND, the Pulse of Redbird Nation. We talked about the MLB playoffs and the MLB finals, and every week, per usual, we like to bring in a news and sports guest to talk about a sports-related topic of their choosing, and we are pleased this week to be joined by Haley Schreffler from the newsroom. Haley, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's good to... I've never been on the Red Zone before, so this is fun.
And I'm glad we can hear you. For people listening who don't know what the station setup is like right now, we've got Leo in the on-air booth. We've got Ferretti and I sitting, 10 feet apart with a glass separator between us in another studio. And then Haley is all the way in the newsroom. And so it's always a toss-up whether we're going to be able to hear somebody in the newsroom. So it's very good to actually hear from you and not have a dead silence right there.
Yeah, it is nice. It's weird because we're so used to all being in the studio, and typically if this pandemic wasn't going on, all four of us would be in the studio. We'd all be seeing each other, our bright smiling faces, discussing things, but, you know, we're making the most with what we have. And as I mentioned, the news and sports gets to choose a topic they want to talk about, and something Haley wanted to talk about, taking things a little bit differently, which we like, is she wanted to talk about social justice in sports, which is a pretty pressing issue right now, not only just in the world, but in the sports world as well, how the athletes and the leagues have been able to incorporate that into the game.
Yeah, so I don't really know a whole lot about sports, so that's pretty much why I chose social justice, and I have a little spiel to, like, start myself. So, as we know, essentially, like, the social justice movement within professional sports started with Colin Kaepernick, who I'm sure you guys know plays for the 49ers, and it's taken to the WNBA, the MLB, the NBA, men's, and the NFL, the rest of the NFL playing, doing their kneeling. And my favorite to talk about is the WNBA because they were actually the first professional teams to wear their Black Lives Matter warm-up jerseys, which is pretty cool.
I absolutely agree, and I'm a huge WNBA fan. And I think the way that they have been able to, as a league, take on these messages and really broadcast them to their audience, I think is really admirable because they were the first to do this with backing, like, the league supporting them, because, you know, you saw Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid for the 49ers a couple of years ago. When they knelt, they had a lot of the league against them, and Colin Kaepernick can't find a job in the NFL right now, and a lot of people think that's because of the tough situation that they put the NFL in. But when the WNBA started, they had complete support from the higher-ups in the leagues and the owners, and I thought that that was a very cool way to do it. And I think the NBA has taken a lot of cues from them on how to get this message out and do it successfully. And I'm really glad you brought that up because I don't think that gets mentioned a lot.
Yeah, I really think it is how you said. Like, everybody's started with taking the cues from the WNBA, where with the NFL, where they kind of didn't allow Kaepernick back in after he took his stance, where now we're seeing leagues are allowing their players to express themselves and take a stand up for something they believe in, where now they're working with them. Each team is kind of doing something a little different, but making sure that the players that want to speak up, that want to make their voices heard, have that platform to do so, and that there won't be any kind of punishment, proving that it is, like, that it's not about sports, that it's bigger than sports, that they can say what they want to say, and there won't be these repercussions.
Yeah, we've seen it with the NFL. They all have been wanting to stand in solidarity, whether that's kneeling for the national anthem or interlocking arms to show that everyone's united. And as you mentioned, Leo, that it is bigger than sports, like we saw in the opening game of the NFL season between the Texans and the Chiefs. They went on the field all together, and the fans booed them, which isn't – I don't think that was right that they did that, because they're trying to stand for what's right and try and fight for equality, because even though they're playing football, this is an issue that is way bigger than winning a game in 60 minutes.
And the NFL has taken steps to kind of rectify the situation that they put themselves in when they're trying to silence Colin Kaepernick, and they have launched this campaign, this It Takes All of Us. If you watch an NFL game this season, you'll see in the back of one end zone, it'll say End Racism, and on the other side, it'll say It Takes All of Us. But there are a lot of players who aren't completely satisfied with that because their words are very different than actions. And the NFL has been, and the owners of the NFL have been notorious for not backing their players when it comes to these types of issues. And so the players' grievances are very legitimate, and you see them kind of taking action upon themselves. Like Drew Brees over the offseason said some remarks that were rather uneducated, I suppose. And Malcolm Jenkins, a player on his own team, called him out and said, "Drew, what you said is not right." And then they were able to have a conversation about it. And so even though that we've seen all these leagues take these progressive steps, I still think the NFL is a step or two behind on making sure that their players feel heard and they can actually speak out about this injustice going on right now.
I would agree. I think the NFL needs to do more to support their players. And you're right, words are different than actions. And the people that basically run the NFL still don't back their players. And that needs to change in one way or the other.
And you've both mentioned the words are bigger than actions. And I think that is very important. And to put more of a local spin on that, I think we saw that here at Illinois State with the comments made by Athletic Director Larry Lyons, and then the subsequent athletes putting out their list of demands and then holding their rally around campus, their march around campus that was at the start of September. And I think that's basically the message that the athletes were trying to get across. Like, it's one thing to say we're going to end racism or to say that, Black Lives Matter, but then it's another thing to act upon that to meet their list of demands, that it does take action to start in the right way. And when I posted my web story for WZND about that, I had a few of my former teammates from my high school track and field days like reach out to me and talk about some things maybe I didn't realize like that went on in high school or some issues I hadn't thought of. So I think that's where we can take actions by ourselves, just by having discussions with our friends, with our family about and being open to listening to new ideas.
And when you talk about, being open to new ideas, I think this idea of higher-ups in the NFL not supporting their players is such an ingrained thing. And another thing locally that we saw just the other day is we saw that assistant coach, offensive coordinator for the Redbirds, resigned unexpectedly before they announced their schedule. And the Pantograph reported that allegedly he had on a sign on his office door when he left, he said, "All lives matter to our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ." And you can understand where the athletes would be so upset about that and this culture that ISU has, where maybe people like us who, we just report on the sports, we don't get to live the everyday lives of the athletes. But that gives a lot of merit to what the athletes were saying, how they don't feel supported by some of the higher-ups in the faculty here at ISU, and that really just shined a light on what the athletes were demanding and what they wanted.
I even think, just in light of it, you were talking with the athletes, outlining it, like you said, in their demands when they were organizing the march and posting on social media, which ultimately led to the plan for social change, which when I talked to Athletic Director Lyons, he said that was actually something they started over the summer, but nonetheless, it's just one way for the athletes to be heard, and obviously the athletes, especially the football players, are going to have mixed reactions to this. But like you said, Haley, just I think there needs to be more done, like you said, in the NFL, and who knows, even here at ISU, what could happen with our athletes. But we've seen there's going to be a bunch of these online discussion forums they're going to have for people to express their experiences so that ISU athletics can promote social or social justice, equality, and inclusion, or equity and inclusion. They've got the diversity group they're trying to organize as well. They have those Black Lives Matter posters with those student athletes. And also, they something else came out about them working on their own personal brand with someone. So that might be able to help them too, to kind of use their platforms, not basically their sport, as a platform to try and get their point across that enough is enough.
I think it's good to hear that they're doing like actual things to start combating racism and inequality. I know that there's other groups on campus besides just our sports teams that are having discussions about it. I'm in a sorority, and we just added a diversity chair, and we're going to have an educational about it. So, like, different groups on campus are actually starting to, like, see the issue and take more action. It probably should have happened a while ago, but I'm glad it's happening at all.
And that's, I think that's just a big example of how these things that we're seeing, you know, these issues that are being reflected in the sports world right now are so much bigger than sports. And a lot of people fail to realize that when they talk about, you know, that why are these athletes complaining because they make millions of dollars and they are living, you know, these luscious lifestyles. But it goes beyond that. And I think that the changes that are happening are just a reflection of that, you know, how some things are just bigger than sports, and it's important for us to recognize that.
And one way of looking at that is where it sometimes sports are the vehicle that start social change. I mean, you look at people like Jackie Robinson and Muhammad Ali that use their platform as athletes to kind of transcend that and inspire social change with that. So I think we've given these athletes these platforms, and so now these platforms can be used for them to inspire social change for good. So I think the two kind of go hand in hand, where, you know, sometimes their silence with that platform could be more of a failure to use that platform for good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a good thing that we're using platforms, because, I mean, me talking about it, I do talk about social change a lot, but I have less than 1,000 followers on Instagram. People aren't dying to hear what I have to say versus their favorite athlete, them saying this needs to change. It can inspire people that don't have that sort of platform, and they can start to understand and maybe take change, take action.
And I think that wraps it up perfectly. It's so important for these athletes to be able to use their platform, and the league's taking steps to allow them to do that is great change, in my opinion. And I think it can only get better with time and players being able to truly speak their minds and represent the things that they stand for.
Couldn't agree more. That is a nice way to end our segment. Once again, Haley, thank you so much for coming on the show and shining light on social justice in sports and how we need more diversity and inclusion.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem. We will take a break, and when we come back, it'll be the Pick 6 Week 4 edition. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
You can listen to WZND at your 21st birthday party. Well, at a bar.
Gotta love hearing that jingle. You know what time it is. It's the best segment in sports talk radio. The Pick 6 here on the Red Zone of the Pulse Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Just to give an update on how this works, we have six NFL games that are going to take place between tonight and Monday night. And basically, we just pick the winners of them. Taking a look at the standings heading into Week 4. At the top, once again, it is Leo Stadaher. He is 14-4.
You know what? Fired my little brother. Had a bounce back 5-1 week. I did what had to be done. Sorry, Paul, but this is just business.
Then in second place, it is Joey Dwyer. He's 13-5.
I will say, now that Leo's brother is on the market as an assistant, I might have to make some phone calls, see what I can do.
Get him on the waiver wire to trade him. Then tied for third, it is faculty advisor Steve Cease and myself. We are both 11-7. Then rounding out the bottom in fifth, per usual, it's the guest. Yeah, they're 8-10, but last week they had their best week so far this season. After going two straight weeks of 2-4, Carter went 4-2.
And I never understand why the guest is always so bad. Like, this is a yearly thing where the guest is at the bottom. And it doesn't make sense. Like, we have a lot of smart people on the staff. Like, how is the guest always at the bottom? It is a question that will boggle my mind till the end of time.
Who knows? Maybe one day we'll listen, and then the guest will be the king. But we'll see. Let's start off with our first game. It is the Thursday night game between the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets. Two winless teams. Not really an exciting game, personally, for Thursday night football, but... yeah, Drew Lock's injured, but I think Denver is going to be able to find a way to get a win.
Yeah, I am actually glad that I'm going to spend the rest of my night down here in Fell Hall working on my TV stuff, so I don't have to watch this game. I think Denver's going to win it, but I think it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, I might even just predict a tie here. I won't, but this is just an ugly matchup.
Bold.
But
that would be bold.
Can we do that? I won't.
A pick six first.
I'm not doing it. I'm picking Denver, but this is just an ugly game, and it's really just a shame because it feels like the past couple Thursday night matchups have been less than fun to watch.
For sure. Haley, who do you have?
I said Denver just because, man, I don't like football, but Denver Broncos seemed like a good choice. You never hear anything about the New York Jets.
That's
like,
very true. They suck. That's who they are. So yeah, that was the right choice.
Yeah, we've seen some things, too, on their stadium. Their turf isn't playable. Now we go to the second game. It is the, can't believe I'm saying this, 3-0 Chicago Bears.
Yes, sir.
Against the Indianapolis Colts. Once again, gave us another heart attack against a team that loves to give up leads, the Atlanta Falcons. Once again, tough game, but we'll see how Nick Foles does in his first official game. I think Bears are taking it.
Oh, thank God. I thought I was going to have to call you a fake Bears fan, Ferretti. The Bears, in my mind, until proven otherwise, are the best team in the league. They're going 16-0, Chicago all the way.
I just think the Bears are so weird this year. I think this Foles thing is going to be a shot in the arm for them, where it's going to get them through a couple weeks. It probably isn't going to be a long-term answer this season, but this could be just what they need to get past the Indianapolis Colts, so I'm going to go with the Bears this week.
Well, I think it would be wrong for me to pick anyone else except the Bears, so I also chose the Bears.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
And where are my manners? Steve Cease, he's picking the Denver Broncos to beat the New York Jets, and he's a Lions fan. He's picking against the Bears again. He's taking the Indianapolis Colts.
I'm sure he would, and I think he's lost three consecutive weeks on picking the Bears, so there's a reason that he's down towards the bottom.
Yeah, he didn't pick the Bears in week one, picked them in week two, then didn't pick them in week three. Moving to the third game, it is the Cleveland Browns against the Dallas Cowboys. Once again, not a too entertaining of a game, but Dallas, they're at home. Think Dak's going to get something done. Cowboys.
See, this is a tough game for me because the Cowboys' defense is bad. Like, they are very, very bad. And so I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say Cleveland, because Cleveland has proven to have the best running offense in the league this year. And I just don't know if the Cowboys can get it done. This might come back to bite me, and because I'm one game behind Leo, but I think this might be the game where I catch him.
This one just has the makings of being like a Big 12 shootout where just neither team plays much defense and there's just tons of points being scored. I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys here just because I think they have the better quarterback and they have Ezekiel Elliott, so they have probably two of the best playmakers in this matchup, so I'm going to go with the Cowboys here.
Man, I think I'm also going to say the Cowboys because I've never watched the Cleveland team play, so I like the Cowboys. I like their cheerleaders. We're choosing Cowboys.
It's a good pick. Steve Cease going with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you never know. Some of us picked the Cowboys to win against the Rams, and Cowboys didn't show up. Moving to the next game, this, in my opinion, should be the Thursday night game.
Yes.
New England Patriots against the Kansas City Chiefs. This is be a good game. I picked Baltimore last week to beat KC. That didn't happen, but just the way Mahomes is going, I mean, he has been unstoppable. KC.
You know, if there was any coach in the league who could coach a defense to beat Patty Mahomes, I think it would be Bill Belichick. However, I think with the Patriots still missing James White, I think that's going to be huge because the Chiefs don't have the best run defense, but the Patriots can't run the ball with just Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead. So I think this one's going to be close, but I think Kansas City's going to pull it out.
Yeah, I got to go with the Chiefs here too. I think they are the most complete team in the NFL. And just, I feel like with New England, it's a different look every week with their offense, how they get it done. We've seen Cam where they've had Cam run the ball 15 times a game, but then he threw for over 300 yards the next week. But I just think Belichick's going to have to pull a really complete game to be able to beat the Chiefs this year. I just don't think this early in the season it's going to happen. I think if they played later in the season, maybe the Patriots. But as of this week, I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Man, I chose the Chiefs on a whim, and I'm glad I did.
Yep, that was the right call.
Get the brooms, because that's a sweep. Steve Cease also going with the Chiefs. We'll see what the Patriots can do. Next game, it is the Sunday night game. San Francisco 49ers, Philadelphia Eagles. San Francisco's hurts. They got a new quarterback. They got McKinnon in the run game. I think San Francisco's going to pull it out, but it will probably be closer than I think.
The 49ers are banged up, but it did not faze them last week against the Jets, who are a bad team. But the Eagles are also a bad team, and so I think that San Francisco has enough skill to just roll over these mediocre teams. So San Francisco all the way.
Yeah, I got to go with San Francisco here. It really is. I think the Philadelphia Eagles are falling apart at the seams. Carson Wentz doesn't look to be the player he used to be. I mean, they seem to be giving Jalen Hurts more and more snaps as the season goes on. So I think they are, despite the injuries the 49ers have, they are just a very well-coached team, and they need a bounce-back performance. So I'm going with San Francisco here.
Another good random pick. I also chose San Fran. I'm good at this. Yeah.
Alrighty. Steve also chose the San Francisco 49ers. That brings us to our final game. Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, this is a no-brainer. Green Bay has been unstoppable. Atlanta, they can't hold on to a lead. Rodgers, go Pack, go.
Yeah, I saw a stat today that was the Packers have the highest scoring offense in the league, and the Falcons have the most points allowed by a defense in the entire league. So I think Aaron Rodgers is just going to have a field day. Packers, easy.
Yeah, angry Aaron Rodgers this season has just been on another level. I think the Green Bay Packers might be one of the best teams in the NFC, so it would be foolish to go against them this week.
I chose the Green Bay, even though, aren't they the rivals to the Bears?
Yes, but they are very, very good, which is unfortunate.
Well, despite that, I did pick them.
All right, that good choice. Good
Smart
choice.
Pick. Once again, another sweep. Steve also taking the Green Bay Packers, so that will just about wrap it up for this week's edition of the Red Zone Podcast. Just to recap what we talked about, we opened up the show talking about the MLB playoffs. White Sox sadly are out of it, but the Chicago Cubs are hopefully can try and get something done. Paul DeJong as well with the Cardinals. The Padres, the NBA Finals also happened. Lakers have a one-game lead over the Miami Heat. See if LeBron James can get his fourth ring. Then we had Haley on the show from the News and Sports Offices to shine light on social justice in sports and what has been done so far and what can be improved. Then we ended with the best segment in Sports Talk Radio, the Pick Six. If you missed any part of this week's show, it'll be online shortly at WZND.com. Don't forget to go on Twitter and vote as well. For everyone in our studio, for Haley, for Joey, and for Leo, I'm Anthony Freddy saying so long. You've been listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.
The Pulse of Redbird Nation.